What is up, everyone? Welcome to the Locked On Cavs podcast, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers. On today's show, Evan and I are going to talk about what Cavs president of basketball operations, Kobe Altman, had to say about the Cavs season and why Shaedon Sharpe declaring for the draft is worth noting for the Cavs, even if he isn't going to fall into their lap. Let's get into it.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
Alright, today's show, if you're listening in audio form, the music on the way and you heard was from Astro Radio. Subscribe to them on, check them out on Spotify or Apple Music. If you're just joining us for the first time, I'm Chris Manning. I cover the Cavs for places like Dime on UpRocks and SB Nation for the Sword. That is Evan Damrell, who covers the Cavs and Cleveland sports for Facebook's Right Down Euclid, primarily. Evan, what is up, buddy? How are you on this Friday?
I'm good, man. Tired, but good. It has been a week, to say the least. I am ready to recharge my battery this weekend, take it easy a little bit. Got a fuzzy on my sweater, but other than that, I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. I am going to have a good weekend, and we're going to relax, and we're gonna keep moving here. As
what are your big plans? Is it going golfing? You going to go play some soccer? What are you going to do?
Jazzy's artist did get traded today, so we need to lock on Columbus Crew so I can discuss this with someone. I'm not going to dox myself, so I'm going to talk about
I'm just going to picture you kicking a soccer ball by yourself in a park, like giggling back and forth, just like Sonic the Hedgehog playing baseball with himself in the first Sonic the Hedgehog movie. Look, which isn't bad.
Make yourself happy, and I respect anyone who's willing to do that. But Evan, let's touch on Kobe Altman. So earlier this week, we're a little behind this week. It's been a busy week, kind of chaotically for both of us. We are going to talk about what Kobe Altman had to say in segment one and segment two in his media availability earlier this week. Segment three, we're going to talk about Shaedon Sharpe. So I want to just unpack this Kobe Altman quote that I'm going to read a part of here. One of the main things he said in his availability quote. It was a success in that we were able to find an identity. We were able to play competitive basketball. Every last game down the stretch had real consequence. You can't call it playoffs, but there was postseason basketball back in Cleveland. Two games of monumental consequence that we're going to grow from as group. I think we're all thinking about possessions that could have been different, what we could have done different to get us there, and it's going to drive us. It's going to drive us to be more complete during the regular season and get to the playoffs. That has been so hard for us to capture the last few years, but we're right there. So what did you make of that comment? And am I right in kind of identifying this as maybe like his kind of like big kind of view on kind of what he said in that media availability?
I think that is. It's one of the more notable things he said during the media availability. Somebody asked me after the fact, it wasn't you, but I forget who asked it, but I was just like, Kobe said a whole lot of things without saying much of anything.
He's very good. He's very good at that.
It was like an hour of just like kind of saying the same stuff in different ways, but like it didn't have a lot of substance to it. But you could glean certain things, which is why we're breaking it down a little bit. But yeah, I think it's interesting to note because I wasn't there in person. I was there on Zoom, so I had a little bit of technical issues. And I did ask him, like, hey, what is like your thought process going into this off season? Like, what are your goals? Like, what is your goals for next year? Things like that. And he kind of downplayed the expectation of playoffs because I don't think he wants to put the public pressure and onus on this team, saying like, hell yeah, we're gonna make the playoffs or we're gonna win 50 games next year. He knows this is a process. He knows that this was probably top 90 to 95 percentile in terms of just results for this team this year. Like, we were talking about this in the beginning of the year, like for the Cavs to get to this point, we said they had a lot of things that had to go their way, and they did. But I think this is a promising sign of things to come, and it's hard to fully understand where Kobe Altman is at, but he's acknowledged like the Eastern Conference is really good and it's only going to get better, and now it's just a bit of a race to kind of remain competitive. And they are not going to be the team. They're going to be a team with a target on their back next year. I think the Cavs players and coaches and everybody else have made this clear. Like, there's no expectation for them to be a surprise next year. People are going to expect the Cavs to be there next year. now it's on Altman and his staff to kind of make sure that it's a little easier for them to do it.
Yeah, look, I look at where this team sort of is and what he had to say about this, and I think the idea that the disappointment could fuel them, I think, is certainly part of this. I think certainly...
Oh, that's just a cliche.
But I think that's also true. I think it's a cliche because it's true, because if you're this team and you look at this year and you look at where you got to and you look at what you didn't get to and whether you thought they would have done well against Miami or not... This is a situation where you got to kind of take what just happened and try to make it mean something more going forward. That is the reality of getting, I think, where the Cavs got to. I think he's right in saying that they had consequence at the end of the year. The Cavs had not had consequence in games where, like, we would, like, if we're talking about this from, like, our perspective, games that we talked about, like, wouldn't have had value because we wouldn't have talked in March or April because we would have been thinking more about draft prospects than we would have been thinking about playoff seeding and wondering if the Cavs could hang in the top six, right? I think what I poke at in that comment that I think is interesting, that I think is probably telling somewhat but also, like, could change based on what the summer is that they said that they found an identity, because I think if he's pressed on what the identity is, I think the identity is that they have Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, and Jared Allen, and I don't think and maybe the defensive first stuff if J.B. Bickerstaff's the head coach, all of that stuff. I still think because of how at the beginning of this process the Cavs really are in a lot of ways, because of how young their main guys are, all of that stuff, and because. There's still, like, a lot of question about what this roster is going to look like. I think the identity is more that they have three really good players to build around, and then it's about figuring out how to supplant them and really make your identity as a team the next couple of years and keep evolving, and as good teams tend to do. I think, like, saying that, like, this is the template of what we're going to... If I don't think he's saying this, but I think if people read that and say, or hear that and say, okay, what the Cavs were this year is the template going forward, I think that's a misunderstanding of what's going on here.
NBA rebuilds and building the team building process, like I said, it's more art than science, and it's fluid. It's incredibly fluid. Like, you're noticing now in the playoffs, a lot of teams are starting to play bigger just because, like, you have, like, the Nuggets with, like, DeMarcus Cousins and Nikola Jokic kind of working in tandem together, or, like, Aaron Gordon's a bigger player as well. The Nuggets are just my example, and also a player that our team, J.B. Bickerstaff, tries to emulate a little bit, but...
Well, you also have teams that are playing smaller. Like, you have Dallas that's like, yeah, hey, we're going to play Maxi Kleba. Yeah, we're going to play Maxi Kleba at the five, and Rudy Gobert, deal with it. Like that's what they're doing.
It's situational, though, too, because you can exploit how the Jazz are poorly built. That's what the playoffs are. Because that's what J.B. Bickerstaff said, too, is, like, listen, the Warriors kind of provided the template for playing small, but it's also really hard because you don't have Steph Curry or Kevin Durant or Klay Thompson or Draymond Green on the floor as well.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to emulate that system. So, like, you have to build your strengths, and the Cavs' strengths are playing big. Like, it's worked. It's not a fluke. I think this is going to be their identity going forward. I'm curious to see how much of their identity going forward. Like, will Lauri Markkanen be here next year? Will he be the starting three? Will the Cavs actually go get, like, an NBA caliber wing and play them instead of the starting three spot and bring Markkanen off the bench? With Love is the other key bench big as well. Like, the Cavs have a lot of interesting pieces and a lot of fluidity, and we can talk more about it in the second segment, but, like, that's something I really gleaned from Kobe's availability, is, like, what are the next steps? And, like, one, he seems like he's a proponent of keeping this draft pick, all three draft picks that Cleveland has in this upcoming draft, but also it's going to really shape the team building process, and I think he can give us some insight on maybe what the next steps are to flesh out this core three that they've kind of fallen into in the last two or three so years.
I think where the Cavs are going to go from here will be really interesting. I think the way they build will be really interesting. And I think because of how this business works, I think with the moves they make will kind of... This quote to me will be worth going back and looking at in 6 months, 7 months, maybe even as early as August, when we see what this roster really looks like. You know, what happens with Sexton? What happens with LeVert? You know, do they go get another, the 2022-23 season version of Ricky Rubio, right? Like, there's things that I want to see what they do that will be interesting. And how they approach the draft, frankly, is part of that, too. That will tell us some stuff. Okay, after the break, we're going to talk about what Kobe Altman had to say about Colin Sexton. And that being, I think there's a... there's a comparison I'm going to make that will, I'm going to see how Evan reacts to it. But first, Evan, you're going to tell everyone about our friends at Shady Rays.
You're absolutely correct. Today's episode of Locked On Cavs is brought to you by Shady Rays. Shady Rays is an independent sunglasses company that gives you the features of $200 sunglasses for the fraction of the price. That means polarized lenses, well-constructed, durable frames, premium high-end finishes, and it's something you won't find anywhere else because Shady Rays has an insane protection program as well. My pair of Shady Rays are in my car right now. I wish I had them on me, but Shady Rays, again, more about this insane protection program. They include lost and broken protection on every pair. They'll send you a brand new pair if you lose them, no matter what happens. So if I happen to run mine over with my car, I can go get a new pair, then run that pair over and get another pair on top of that. Give them a try, and if you don't love them, you'll pay nothing. It's as simple as that. Plus, 10 meals are donated to fight hunger in America when you shop with Shady Rays. Exclusively for our listeners, head to ShadyRays.com and use code LOCKEDON to get 50% off two or more pairs of polarized sunglasses. That's code locked on for the best deal of the season. 50% off two or more pairs of Shady Rays sunglasses backed by over 150,000 verified five-star reviews. And folks, if you struggle with doing basic math, you're essentially getting two pairs of sunglasses for the price of one at this deal. So that's pretty sick, especially with summer coming around and Cleveland's winter finally ending.
All right, we're back here on Locked On Cavs. I'm Chris Manning. That is Evan Zamarle. Evan, here's what he had to say about Colin Sexton in case people missed it. Quote, he, in reference to Sexton, in a lot of ways, was the start of not only the rebuild, but the culture we have in place now. We asked him
what he said in the past.
We had asked him to do a tall task, four straight finals, and now we're sort of starting anew, and he was the start of that. We wanted to have a place that thrived from great attitude, great work ethic, and somebody that really wanted to be in Cleveland, help us get back to those heights. He embodied every part of that, and he still does today. So he, in a lot of ways, is the reason why we're here, because he started that culture for us. He's enormously important to us. To lose him, you can see him throughout the year, why we missed him or how we missed him. So this is how I view this. He's not going to come out and say like anything negative, obviously. That's not how this works. But what I do think is telling, yeah, that if you're his agency, which no free ads for his agency this time, they are just going to – they should absolutely show that to Kobe Altman and say, hey, if you feel this way, give us the contract we're looking
for. Show me the money.
Show him the money. If you're that is the kind of thing that you look at and say, okay – if you believe this, then let's get it done financially. I also think like the comparison I will make here is in another Cleveland sports situation, a little bit different than this one, a little bit of a different stakes in a lot of ways. Do we all remember not that long ago how effusive to some degree some of Brown's people were about Baker Mayfield before they then decided to go get Deshaun Watson?
Yeah, I mean,
these things could be lies.
You rode with six.
Yeah.
But, oh, you're talking about the Browns in general. Yeah, you rode with six.
I'm saying what Barry and Safan, they're not gonna, you know, this so is how this works.
Fans. I'm just like, yes, Baker no, Mayfield fans there, are
there are there are there are fans. There are still bigger Mayfield fans who are being weird, but
frankly embarrassing. But go ahead.
Yes.
I think
this is all to me a reminder that what they can say publicly does not always indicate where this at. I think the way how effusive they've been, how much Sexton has been around in public is sort of interesting to me in that sense. If we're reading the tea leaves, this is just a little bit like, let's earmark this and let's see where this goes in like a month or two.
Yeah, let's see how this goes once the season concludes and we're in the technical new year of the NBA calendar. But I think it's just a positive step in the right direction. It kind of tracks with things you've heard, things I've heard, things other people have shared, where it feels more and more likely that Colin Sexton will be playing for the Cavaliers next season. But the Baker Mayfield comparison is an interesting one. Let's just say a talented, can't-miss prospect just like falls into Cleveland's lap, and then the team who has said prospects says like, hey, we want Colin Sexton. Let's just say like Colin Sexton, Caris LeVert, and a couple future picks. Like, it'd be remiss of Cleveland not to explore that trade. Like, yes, Colin Sexton has been a key piece culturally. He's been a key piece both on and off the floor for the Cavs as well. Like, but it's also remiss as an organization to not flesh out and build properly around Mobley, Garland, and Allen, because those are your three most important pieces, and those are your three only true untouchables in this roster. Like, yes, Isaac Okoro is available. Colin Sexton should be available. Caris LeVert should be available. Larry Markkanen, Kevin Love, etc. As long as you're not one of those three aforementioned players, you're available. And at the same time, like, it makes sense. Like, Kobe Altman has said a lot of the same things about Colin. He's called him the cultural leader, like a dynamic cultural leader, I think is the exact phrasing he used 2 years ago. And it hasn't really changed. I think if you're the Cavs, and I think if you are Colin's representation, you'll just say, like, hey, let's talk about things. 1 second. Colin also did say, when asked, like, hey, about your contract situation, he's like, I want to be here. Like, I think I made it clear I want to be here. I think it means a lot to me if they keep me involved in, like, the personnel decisions, and they keep me in, not the personnel decisions, but, like, they asked for my input and my thoughts on, like, play-in planning, things like that. And I think that is important. And also, he, like, it means a lot to him. And but he also just threw it up to his agent and the Cavs front office, say, like, it's not on me. I'm just going to go out there and keep playing my game and get better. It's just on those two sides to figure out, like, what's best for me and what's best for this team. And hopefully they can find a common ground. But, Chris, let me ask you this. Even though he had the meniscal tear, would you think it would be a bad call on Cleveland's part just to offer the same contract you did last year, maybe with a little less incentives and just, like, maybe a little bit more money up front instead of him having to, like, claw to get it?
What was the – remind me what the number was.
So it's been reported. Apparently Chris Fuhrer from Cleveland.com said it was similar to what Bogdanovich is making with Atlanta. Jason Lloyd reported it last year. I did too, that it was 4 years or the Cavs wanted 5 years, $100 million. Colin wanted 4 years, $100 million. If you could get him to sign to a 5-year, $100 million contract and you're paying him $20 million a year, would you think that's an abject failure on the Cavs' part? I think that's a pretty fair offer. And if you're them, maybe you just want to wrap this up as quickly as possible so it doesn't become more of a headache than it needs to be.
I would need to see what the I'd have to, number one, I think, like, the 5-year timing, I would need to kind of look into how that kind of works on some of those deals, because there can be some CBA stuff in that. I still think what
as long as it's not a max contract. So let's say they sign Garland to a 5-year max deal. That is one of your slots you're using. Okay.
So
then, like, because Allen is on a 5-year, $100 million deal. It's Sexton to be another 5-year, $100 million deal. Then, like, 2 years down the line, you sign Evan Mobley to that 5-year max. Those are your two max spots between Garland and Mobley.
I think the Rozier contract feels just more...
I know that's a template they've used in negotiations in the past. Like, what's Terry Rozier making? Or, like, if you want to make it a shorter contract, let's say it's like a 2-3 year extension instead, just so the Cavs have a little bit of an out, I guess.
And Rozier, Rozier's was the deal he signed with Charlotte was 3 years. He'll be a free agent after, I believe, next.
I'm looking up the exact numbers now.
Yeah.
That was a 4-year, $97 million contract that'll keep him through the 25-26 season. Yeah. So he has two more years left.
Yeah. So in 21, 23, 24, 26. I think 20 as an average is probably right just because of his age.
So I'll say, if you're going to quibble over $3 million, my man.
No, the Gilberts have lots of money. They can afford this.
He's buying Chelsea. You're a big fan. You and Larry Nance, bruv. Go blue. Back the blue, you know?
I can't with you.
I know.
I just would like to see that.
You're an Arsenal fan, Chris. I'm sorry. We haven't spoken in a few days, really, on the mic. This is where I'm going to be a real spicy baby.
Troubling. I will wonder. The other thing about this that I will find really interesting is I tend to think that it makes sense for the Cavs to try to front load this to some degree, like give him the most
absolutely.
Money.
Absolutely. The but, Kobe Altman special of trading.
Kobe Altman has two specials. It is, hey, we're gonna give you a front loaded contract. Well, he has three specials. It is, hey, we're gonna front load the contract.
That's one.
Two. We're going to give you, like, a good amount of money to come here, but we're also going to slap a weird non-guarantee in the last year of your deal. So, like, Jetty Osmond and Lauri Markkanen, Jetty Osmond's fully non-guaranteed, and then
Markkanen's caveat is he's the one who approached the Cavs saying, let's make it happen because he wanted out of Chicago. But, yes, and then
But Kobe Altman still did it, and there's, like, a $6 million, like, guarantee in the last year. And then, lastly, there's the, hey, you're an interesting player we got on the cheap. We're going to sign you to a 4-year deal, like, that has basically a bunch of non-guarantees in it.
$2.2 million a year, and we'll guarantee it with, like, two other contracts to make the upgrade.
Yeah, other teams do that as well, all that stuff. But, like, it's a thing they do.
I mean, it's smart. It's a smart way to manage the situation, I guess.
Especially because their cap sheet's like a little wonky.
Oh, their cap sheet's atrocious. So,
yeah, what I will find interesting
not
is
not atrocious, but they have a lot of money now, and they have to pay a lot of money over this summer, next summer, and so on, depending on how they feel about Isaac Okoro and whatnot.
Yeah, and like, look, there. I think you have to be. I think the reason that the players in their camps don't always want those deals is because if you have like a lesser number, it makes you easier to trade, and then you have less control over where you're playing. But if you're the Cavs, that is 100% a scenario I'm exploring. I want to ask you this. When I was on Chico after dark last week, he asked me 1 through 10.
You were on there a few days ago, you little rat.
Was it, dude? Time. Flat circle. Don't know any time anymore.
Chris records with Chico before he records with me. Pass it on.
Chico doesn't troll me. I troll Chico. Look.
I don't know what keeps you in place. Me and your wife.
I'm much more scared of Leanne than I am of you.
I know. Leanne's terrifying, so I understand that.
He asked me 1 through 10. What are the odds I think Colin is back? And I said 7 out of 10. Where are you on that skill?
I'd say an 8.5. Okay. I just think there's too much public like friendliness with each other. I know they did a lot of this last year leading up to his contract extension, but it was down to the years. Like Sexton wanted to be paid $25 million annually. The Cavs wanted to pay him $20 million annually with guarantees to bump it up even higher.
And then since then his agency has changed, which is I think a normal part of this.
Yeah, and I think if you're the important part of this is who the agency is and read between the lines here, but also the fact that his agency can also make the argument saying like, hey, you could have used Colin a lot this season in like certain scenarios, and like if you want to retain someone like that, you should pay him like that. And like you said, the Terry Rozier contract is like the base and the template. It's not a bad one. Maybe you just increase it more because the TV revenue is going to be kicking in like 2 years, I think, as well. So like this contract will be relatively meaningless in the grand scheme of things with how much more money the Cavs may have. But I don't know. I think I'm more of a 8.5, but depending on how, let's just say the draft goes, we'll say how free agency may begin, because either Cleveland signs him to an extension almost immediately, or they try to make other deals involving trades or other players, and then they come back to Colin because they know, like, okay, well, he wants to be here. Maybe we can focus on other avenues first, and hopefully that doesn't blow up in their face. And if it does, that number slides way down for me. And it'd be weird to see. I'm just going to say it'll be weird to see him in another uniform just based on what I've gathered. And I think the Cavs are an organization who say a lot of cryptic things, but, and we'll talk about it in the final segment, just the one last thing I gleaned from Kobe's presser, but I don't think they'd put this much out in the ether if they weren't serious about extending Sexton. Sexton to an extension.
Yeah, that was to me like a thing ever since he was like very visibly like doing stuff with the team like at games.
Yeah, like they've had him involved. I mean,
like,
I know
not just in like
his thing, and I was wrong on that one. The league lifted them, but once he kind of gained a little bit of mobility where he was able to kind of be away from Atlanta and be in front of Cavs doctors instead, he's been in Cleveland a lot. And like Kobe joked that Colin was still here. He hasn't left for vacation yet, like him and Lamar Stevens, but it is what it is.
Lamar's on Twitter being like, where should I go eat breakfast? And I'm like, Lamar, I respect this. All right, after the break, let's talk about Shaden. Here's the thing. Breakfast food, if you just find a place that is like pretty competent and doesn't like mess it up, you're probably in a good spot.
Breakfast is hard. It's easy to mess up if you overcomplicate it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of places who will overcomplicate things. And there are some places who just have like 5-6 signature dishes that slap, and you can have a good time every time.
Yes. All right. After the break, I'm going to explain why Shaden Sharpe is worth noting, even if he's not necessarily on the Cavs.
I like that you enunciated it after, because I thought you said we were going to talk about Shannon Sharpe in the notes.
Nope. All right. But first, going to tell everyone about Built Bar. Built Bars are the best tasting protein bar out there. And look, they are going to help you try to be healthier in 2022 as the year goes on. Built Bars have incredible macros. So 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 grams of net carbs, and 17 grams of protein. Just go to built.com, scroll down to the macros chart, and you're going to be blown away. They're high protein, low calorie, high fiber, and low carb. They have dozens of amazing flavors in rotation all the time. Mint brownie, coconut almond, to name a few. They're all delicious, and new flavors are coming out all the time. If you think a flavor might be good, they're going to make it. It'll be delicious, and it will be good for you. So go to built.com, use the promo code LOCKED15, and get 15% off your order. Again, the promo code is LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. They have peanut butter back in stock right now, in addition to all those other flavors. So go check them out and try some Built Bars today. Promo code LOCKED15. All right, last segment here on the Lockdown Chaos Podcast. I'm Chris, that's Evan. Evan, here is just what I'm going to say about Shaden Sharpe, the Kentucky player. Here's the 101. Number one, 6'6 guard from Canada, who was enrolled at Kentucky, never played for the Wildcats, was considered the top prospect in the 2022 class, according to ESPN, before the reclassification and enrolling early. He was thought to maybe be going back early. It seems like John Calipari is still going to try to bring him back to Kentucky next year. I don't think that's going to happen. He is not going to go back. He's going to be draft eligible next year.
Get that money. Let someone bank on your potential, my guy.
This is a very athletic wing with scoring versatility. I don't think this is a guy that if the Cavs end up staying at 14, Evan, before we go, you are going to do a tankathon sim before we go today. So I'm going to ask you to get that going. Of course. But why I think this matters, if you're Cleveland, is he adds a wild card to the draft. He adds another guy in that top six-ish, top eight-ish range.
Speaking of tankathon, they have him currently going seventh to the Sacramento Kings.
Okay. So if he goes in that range, he's maybe going to bump someone that's top 10 worthy a little bit further down in the draft. If someone maybe is going to take like a Dyson Daniels type at that 7-8 range, maybe that bumps Daniels more into the Cavs range. Maybe this bumps someone into Cleveland's range at to 10, 11, where like they can maybe trade up to go get someone if that person slips to 10 or 11. They'll have their 2 second-round picks, some other stuff. They want to try to move up a little bit to go get somebody if they want to approach it that way.
Are you really that intrigued by Dyson Daniels?
Yeah, I am.
Even though the lack of three-point percentage and the projected three-point percentage is not great?
I'm intrigued. There's a lots of guys in this draft. Okay,
This is not a Dyson Daniels.
This is not a Dyson Daniels conversation.
I know, but you mentioned his name, and I'm on him. I'd rather have Johnny Davis if I had to pick. But
okay, pick Johnny Davis. Pick whatever prospect you want.
So if you are a Cavs fan listening to this show, and I assume you are, Kobe Altman did say that they're going to be prioritizing shooting, length, and athleticism when it comes to their free agency and draft process. So that screams forward to me, but go ahead with your
take. They say wing player
in general. So
there's an
overabundance of wings that can dribble a little bit or shoot in the range for Cleveland's picking.
Yes, if this helps one of those guys slip there or allows them to maybe trade up a spot or two to go get the guy they want by using their second round pick or something, this helps them to some degree. This just adds. This isn't outside of the Chets. The Ivies, everyone at the top of this draft. Those are guys that are going to, we kind of know where they're going to go 1, 2, 3, 4, Paolo, right? If you go down a little bit further, the depth, you get different reads on it. You get different understandings of where guys are going to go. This is a thing.
Yeah, it's out of the top four. It's a bit of a crapshoot.
So if Sharp is in there and he's in the 6-8 range or something like that, maybe this helps bump a guy, gives the Cavs a little bit more juice to get someone in at that 14th pick if they end up staying there.
Sorry, I hit tankathon, the Cavs got first. I'm gonna hit it again just so we have a little more of an interesting discussion. I like Shaden Sharpe. I watched a lot of his high school tape because I've been getting to know some of these prospects. Like, I really like Ochai Agbaji from Kansas. Like, I think he's interesting. I like Ty Washington at the Cavs, one of the drafted point guards, is truly backup Darius Garland. I like Terry Eason from LSU, but he's rising. I like Johnny Davis from Wisconsin. I like Benedict Mathurin, even though defensively he doesn't seem that great. I like EJ Liddell from Ohio State. If the Cavs fall in love with him, we're able to trade back. Like Wendell Moore from Duke, like, isn't a bad option either. Like, the Cavs have options here.
Well, Wendell Moore is more of a second round.
Late first, early second.
Yeah. He, in the I'm doing a Twitter mock with our friend at Mavs Draft on Twitter, one of our lockdown experts, and I took the guy from Kansas whose name I need to learn how to pronounce, and then Wendell Moore with my with the two Cavs picks, which
that's
I think
not a
if you
bad
do that,
draft for Cleveland.
That's a very good draft.
You're stocking your cupboard with wings that can shoot.
Yeah. Yeah, so
that's exactly what you need. Or if like you're the Cavs, and let's just say Patrick Baldwin's available in the late first, maybe you take a swing on him because he was one of the top prospects in this draft class before going to Milwaukee and just looking bad for a very non-power school has tanked his draft stock. So there's options here. Like Kennedy Chandler from Tennessee intrigues me a little bit too. It's just like a guard off the bench for the Cavs. Like, I think there's an avenue, and I've warmed up to this idea more, just like looking at Cleveland's cap sheet and how much money they have to commit over the next few years to players and some hard decisions they may have to make. I think adding depth and restocking through the draft while signing some like marginal veterans with like your MLE or just two veteran contracts is kind of your strategy right now. And then you hope like you hit on one or two of these rookies, obviously, so you can just round out your rotation quicker.
Yeah, I think there's a real argument to be made that these picks could have a lot of value. And look, I just for the record, if somehow Shaedon Sharpe falls to 14...
Even 58
yeah.
for the Cavs.
Well, that one a little less so, but like top of the second...
They could grab like Michael Foster Jr., who's ranked 60th on Tankathon right now.
Or do some cap grifting and just like draft a guy that'll never come to the NBA. Or like a two-way guy that you... Or like get a, do the... what
Ziga Samar, who's a 6'6 point guard from Fulham Labrada.
I'm trying to think of the guy that's on Atlanta that played for, is on the College Park, it was a second round point guard last year for them. Just ended up signing a two way. You have guys that just signed two ways. Like, that's the kind of thing you could do with those picks if you want to get the scoop on a guy they might want to look at a UDFA. And look, just for the record, if Shaedon Sharpe, for whatever reason, this probably isn't going to happen. But
no,
for some reason.
There's going to be a team who's intrigued by his potential. Are you talking about Sharif Cooper?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, he's really good. Really good.
My point is that if he somehow falls to 14, and that happens, you run the draft card up and you take him. Just for the record. If he has somehow slipped to 14, you put yourself into the metaverse and you get to the podium as fast as you possibly can.
I can help him get there if they need me to. But no, I agree. Shaedon Sharpe would be really, really good for this Cavs team. I think there's a lot of interesting players the Cavs could nab at 14. I just think with how top-heavy this draft is, whether it's Banchero or Holmgren or Ivy or Smith, like those are going to be your top four. It depends on how teams feel about them. I feel like Chet's going to go first just because of his entry, because he has like Rudy Gobert potential on defense with perimeter shooting sprinkled in. So like
Rudy Gobert, but like ability to do something on offense in the playoffs.
Yeah. Listen, man, the Stifle Tower will look really good in Charlotte. Nick Batum will pass on a good word about playing for Michael Jeffrey Jordan. But, yeah, it's going to be an interesting time for Cleveland. We're going to be upping our draft coverage, I would assume. Just like talking about certain prospects, maybe we talk about a different wing. Like, we'll really start breaking him down. Like, I really like Abjahi from Kansas quite a bit. Yeah, some people will say like his senior season was a bit of a fluke shooting wise, but like I think there's something there because he's always been a competent 3-point shooter. It's just like he had to become more comfortable when he seasoned his game in Kansas. He's going to come along slowly, but I think he plays defense, and that's the biggest thing for the Cavs too.
Yeah, we're going to do more drafts. If Evan had remembered this, next Friday, we are going to have, I believe, Richard from at Mavs Draft on Twitter on to do a little volume one of draft prospects to know. We're going to start diving into those guys as much as we can.
No, I don't check the calendar. I just check open the
Google
box,
made the calendar and said, hey, this is what we actually talked about this together. We made this and you just forgot. But on Monday,
when did we talk about this?
Like last weekend.
Was it at the Hawks game?
I don't remember when, but I know we talked about this because
might have been at the Hawks game. It was so loud I couldn't hear anyone talking. I was like overwhelmed with how loud it was. Because you scared the shit out of me that game too. Because I almost clocked you. Because that's how bad you scared me.
Yeah, karma. Look, on Monday, we are going to start a little 4-part Darius Garland season wrap-up. We're going to do some more season wrap-up stuff next week. Monday, all about Darius Garland season arc, what he was, how important he was to the team, all of that stuff. Next week's really going to be a very Darius Garland-focused week. So if you have some Darius Garland mailbag questions, we're going to do an episode this week that is just questions about one Darius Garland. So get those in. Tweet them at LockdownCavs.
Ask. If you're higher in Boyd, we don't want to hear it.
Okay, you just made it weird. You just made it weird. You've made it weird seven times this episode.
Yeah.
We're back.
Tweet them. Rest in peace to Eddie the Otter. If you know, you know.
Okay, anyway, I'm going to land this plane and kick you off of it. But look, and then tweet your questions at LockedOnCavs, LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. Next week, all about Darius Garland and draft prospects with Richard Stamen on Friday. Until then, I'm Chris, that's Evan. Be well. Have a great weekend. And if you're going to go see the movie that is really some kind of version of Hamlet, I will perhaps be there as well. Talk to you soon.